for some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
And we're back, everybody. Welcome back to the FTN DataCast presented by the FTN Network here on Thursday, July 21st, 2022. Teams are reporting to training camp, but it's that time. It's very exciting. And I am bringing you a new episode talking some risers and fallers today. And we're getting some news each and every day. Some of it's, I don't want to say not real, but some of it's more believable and more we should take it into account than others. And it'll be very interesting to see the last couple months, maybe even last couple weeks, even last couple days, who's been rising and falling in terms of fantasy football. And to do that, I have brought on a spectacular guest. First time doing a podcast with this guest, it's Dave Kluge from footballguys.com. Dave,
yeah,
what's going on, man? You know, Twitter's been fun. Sometimes we disagree on some players, Gabe Davis. But that could be anybody on Twitter nowadays. But what's going on? Thanks for stopping by. And how's the offseason been? And what's going on over at Football Guys?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me, Adam. Yeah, we've been following each other on Twitter for a while. It's kind of insane that it took us this long to finally link up. But I am absolutely honored to be here. Always love talking some football. So thank you so much for having me. But yeah, you know, you can find all my stuff at Football Guys. You can find me on Twitter at Dave Kluge. This time of year, what I'm doing are player spotlights, you know, these articles that, you know, 2,000 to 2,500 words, they're deep dives on specific players, and I've been doing those. They're a lot of fun, you know, just helping me kind of formulate a strong take on a player. Just wrapped up one on Jamar Chase that should be out in a few days here, but I've already done quite a few. You can find all of those at footballguys.com. But yeah, man, this is going to be fun. You know, I took a talking risers and fallers. You can go a lot of different ways with it. I personally try not to get too invested in the camp reports that are coming out right now. You know, I see people sliding Leonard Fournette down their rankings because he packed on a few pounds, and you know, talking about how Ronald Jones, you know, some beat reporter gave an opinion piece that he might not make the final roster. Now everyone's freaking out about Ronald Jones. I try to stick to my priors a little bit more than that and not get too swayed by camp news. So a lot of the risers and fallers I'm going to be talking about are people that have kind of moved on a bigger scale over the offseason rather than just within the last few days, because as tough as it is to you know, you want to stay plugged in, you also don't want to overreact to camp news in July.
I know, and it's so tough too, because like we're so thirsty for any sort of relevant news that can like sway our opinions on a player, and it's only going to get worse, right? We have training camps, we're going to see players that we, you know, really liked that are running with the ones, and players that we didn't like that are running with the twos. And it's just gonna, you know, sometimes it'll help you confirm your priors. But yeah, like I'm the same way. Like I don't view, I try not to make a huge deal out of everything. Like the Ronald Jones news today, it's literally somebody's opinion. That's their job, is to write a prediction article about who's making the team. That was their prediction. That's, you know, obviously they are plugged in more than we are with the Kansas City Chiefs, but that does not necessarily mean by any means Ronald Jones isn't going to make the 53-man roster. And it's funny because I'm going to be talking about Ronald Jones in that backfield later on this episode. And of course, that news comes out today and I'm like, oh, great. This is exactly what I needed. But yeah, it's an exciting time.
Adam, and, you know, we do a ton of best ball drafts. You and I have been in so many drafts together. And what I try to do is actually use this news to my advantage.
Yeah.
So when everybody else, if everyone else is going to freak out about Ronald Jones, awesome. I'm just going to draft Ronald Jones at a discount now, cheaper than I've been able to get him for the last few weeks. Same thing with Leonard Fournette. I got Leonard Fournette in the mid third round of a draft the other day. If people are going to overreact to camp news, go right ahead and overreact. I will just sit there and gobble up that value.
It's just like, do we not learn? Like, obviously, everybody points to the Jamar Chase storylines last season with the drops and everything. But, like, even before that, Justin Jefferson, his rookie season, wasn't running with he was the third receiver on the depth chart.
Was better than Justin Jefferson like, in camp, yeah.
It's like, wow, a rookie receiver isn't immediately running with the ones on the first practice or the first, it's tough to balance what you think is actionable and notable and what's not, but it's important because like it does affect a lot of things. Like you mentioned, you got Leonard Fournette in the third round. He's usually in the second round pretty much at all times. So it'll be very interesting to see some players that continue to rise and fall in terms of ADP and everything as the training camp and, of course, preseason. Right. I mean, a couple years ago, there's always one player with a preseason play. Amir Abdullah, his rookie season, breaks off a couple long runs and everybody's in on Amir Abdullah. And, you know, players are struggling. And it's just like, it's exciting, but it's also because we haven't had football in so long that it kind of makes everything a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? just reactionary than it really needs to be. So,
if you think people are overreacting now, we're only a couple of weeks away from preseason.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like once
then the overreaction.
Like who's a hyped up? Who's a hyped up rookie right now? Like I don't know. Like Christian Watson, if he's running with the one, that's a little different though. Like if Christian Watson's running with the ones, that's pretty notable. But like he rips off like a 40-yard catch and run or something in preseason. Yeah, it's. So, and of course,
Alec Pierce, you know, it takes one touchdown for people to go crazy about him. I mean, we saw it last offseason when Jesper Horsted had a big preseason game. People were pumping up Jesper Horsted on a team with Jimmy Graham and Cole Kmet, and people thought Jesper Horsted was going to be a thing. I mean, that's what preseason's all about, is overreacting.
So I want to start with the followers then, because I want to go right into the Kansas City Chiefs. We can just tie this in with the Ronald Jones prediction that there was a beat reporter that predicted that Ronald Jones may not make the 53 man roster. But for me, prior to this news, I had already been moving Clyde Edwards-Helaire down in my rankings, and it's so tough with him because what do we always talk about? We want running backs in elite offenses, and that is the case of Clyde, but it's not the role that we would think it would be from Clyde, right? I mean, coming out of LSU, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was viewed as one of the best pass catcher running backs, not just in the class. He clearly was the best pass catcher running back in that class, but he was being viewed as one of the best pass catcher running backs to come out of college in a couple of years. And he just hasn't gotten that role. And not only that, like I could be very wrong on Clyde if one of two things happens. If they decide, okay, we're going to give him the goal line work because this is still going to be good offense, which I don't believe because they haven't done that. Or he finally gets consistent pass game usage with Darrell Williams gone. And with Ronald Jones, if he's on the team, we know Ronald Jones' limitations in the passing game. But for me, the worry I have, you remember his rookie season, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the first game of the NFL season in his rookie year against Houston, he had like 20 plus carries, 100 yards and a touchdown. It was like, if you didn't take Clyde in the first round, you're stupid. You're an idiot. And in that game, he had six carries inside the five in that game alone, his first career NFL game. He's had six since. Like, insane. And I think Ronald Jones, and this is why I like Ronald Jones even before this news, Ronald Jones has been one of my favorite zero RB running backs to target. I think that's going to be his role assuming he's on the team. So what are your thoughts on Clyde in this backfield? I'm assuming the way we kind of led off with it, you're not really reacting to this Ronald Jones news much at all. I'm just very worried about Clyde. If he is the pass catching running back, that's great. And that's what we want from him. But if he's not, and he's not getting goal line work, which it hasn't mattered who's been in their backfield. Their creativity at the goal line has been shuffle passes to Travis Kelce, jet sweeps to Patrick Mahomes. And like, I just don't know if the ceiling's there as much as it should be given the offense he's in.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it's hilarious because in that game where he got the five or six goal line touches in the first game, it was on a primetime game, you know, week one, everybody was tuning in. He got stuffed every single time, too. And it makes sense. I mean, this guy's 5'7". He's not a guy that you want smashing between the tackles at the goal line. So he's never going to get that role. And
I forgot that, too. He got stuffed every time. And it was like, after that, I was like, oh, I was the same way. I was like, oh, I don't care that he got stuffed 5-6 times. All I care is he got six opportunities. And I was like, okay, if this is legitimately his usage going forward, granted, I don't think he caught a pass in that game or maybe caught one. But it's like, if this is usage he's getting going forward, yeah, he's going to be a first round draft pick. And then that completely disappeared.
Yeah, and everybody that drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire was really, you know, putting a feather in their cap after that game because of the usage, and it's just been downhill since then. So I'm with you. You know, I've moved off Clyde Edwards-Helaire quite a bit, and he's been a huge faller for me. You know, what I always try to do are dynasty startups right when the season ends, you know, like late January, February, March. I like to do some dynasty startups then. And I was looking back at one just a few days ago where I got Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the eighth round, and I thought that was a fantastic value at the time. Now, a few months later, I wouldn't even think about drafting Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the ninth round. And it's just, you know, as this offseason has progressed, I think the signing of Ronald Jones really shows how the team feels about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So he's been one of my favorite targets. You said in zero running back builds, but also in hero running back builds. You know, just seems like there's so many ways that you can fit Ronald Jones in there. I got him on my SFB roster. I've got him on a ton of best ball teams for exactly the reason that you said. He is going to be the goal line back there on a very explosive offense. And Ronald Jones has his inadequacies as a well-rounded running back. He's not great at holding onto the ball. He's terrible at catching the ball, but they're not going to ask him to do that. I mean, he's going to be the early down and goal line back. And while it might not give him a huge ceiling, I think he's going to have a pretty solid weekly floor. So what you're hoping for with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like you said, is that he gets that passing down work. But without the goal line work as well, really, how high is Clyde Edwards-Helaire's ceiling? I mean, we might see some 15, 20-point games here and there, but overall, I just can't really get too excited about Clyde Edwards-Helaire with his presumed role in this offense.
Yeah, and the other thing with Ronald Jones, if he is the early down running back getting the majority of the carries, like, yes, his upside will be capped if he's not catching passes, obviously, but the Chiefs have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. Looking at some of the advanced numbers at FTN Fantasy, we have a lot of offensive line numbers, and they were, I think, third or second behind only the Eagles in yards created before contact per rush. Like, they are loaded up front. They're absolutely loaded. So for me, it's been, nothing that's happened today is changing my stance. I've just been passing on Clyde and waiting a few rounds and getting Ronald Jones. So we'll see what happens in camp. If maybe this prediction comes true maybe it's McKinnon who's, you know, the 1A or 1B or 2 in this backfield they brought back recently. It's so interesting because, like, Clyde gets drafted. Patrick Mahomes kind of, you know, they asked Patrick Mahomes, like, who do you want? And he's like, go draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And it's like, oh, he's the, you know, elite dynasty running back, and it just has completely fallen off since. Fallers for you.
The other thing I'll point out too is that Kareem Hunt, when he had his two fantastic years in Kansas City, he wasn't catching a ton of passes. He had less than 100 targets in those two seasons. Mm-hmm. So even if he is just getting, you know, the early down and goal line touches, which is what Kareem Hunt had, he wasn't a three down back, and he was still putting up elite fantasy production. So I think you can get that with Ronald Jones, because as a pure runner, he is very good at doing just that. He might not have all of the extra stuff that you want to see out of a running back, but he can grab the football and bang between the tackles, and that's really all they're going to ask him to do.
Yeah, 100%. So sticking with the followers here, let's get it over with. One of my favorite receivers.
Oh, no. You're an Amon-Ra St. Brown guy, aren't you?
He was my favorite receiver in the draft class. Again, I say this all the time. People are like, Ja'Marr Chase. Obviously, I didn't have him ranked ahead of Ja'Marr Chase, but my favorite receiver to watch in the draft class was Amon-Ra St. Brown. I thought it was egregious he fell to the fourth round. But even as a massive fan of his, I understand there's some concerns, and I'm sure you'll lay it out for me.
Yeah, and I really like Amon-Ra St. Brown, the football player. I've got plenty of tweets from last offseason where I was boosting him up quite a bit. I thought he slid in the draft, too. I mean, he's good at what he does. I was a little bit concerned about his outlook as the season ended, but, you know, his end-of-season finish looked great, but there's just so much context missing from that. And most importantly, it's just how he performed when TJ Hockenson and DeAndre Swift were injured. And you can make the argument that he progressed as a rookie, but it's just so alarming, the huge difference in these splits. So weeks 1 through 12, DeAndre Swift was healthy, TJ Hockenson was healthy. During those games, we're looking at 12 total games, and Amon-Ra St. Brown averaged 4.7 targets, 3.5 receptions, 32 receiving yards, didn't have a single touchdown on a 14.5% target share. And then all of a sudden, TJ Hockenson gets hurt, DeAndre Swift gets hurt, and from the end of the season, we know what happened from there. 11.2 targets per game, averaging a full touchdown per game, nearly 100 yards per game, and a 32% target share. I mean, this guy was putting up Cooper Kupp numbers at the end of the season. And now, he goes into next year with a healthy DeAndre Swift and a healthy TJ Hockenson. On top of that, this team signed DJ Chark. They traded up for Jameson Williams. By the end of the season, when Jameson Williams is healthy, there's a realistic chance that Amon-Ra St. Brown is fifth on this team in targets. We saw him produce a ton of fantasy points last year, but he was vying for targets with guys like Khalif Raymond and Josh Reynolds and Kadarius Hodge, Quintez Cephas, Trinity Benson. I mean, these aren't names that I'm making up. These are actual NFL players that he was playing on the field with and getting targets over. So the path to a meaningful workload, is just going to be so much more difficult with all of these new guys in Detroit that I just am a little bit concerned that he's going to end up being that odd guy out. Had he been pushed down to a spot, you know, like where you could draft him as a back end wide receiver 3 or as your wide receiver 4, I'd be in on him, but people just haven't really adjusted that much yet, and he's still getting drafted as a wide receiver 3.
Yeah, I'm no surprise. I'm a little higher still. I think it would be, I'd be shocked if he fell behind that far. I think he still leads the team in targets. Dan Campbell's a huge fan of his. And you got to remember with Detroit, like, after their bye in week 8 or week 9, they played in week 8, had a week 9 bye. And then right after that, it was the week 10 game against Pittsburgh. Dan Campbell took over play calling duties the rest of the season. And that's when, obviously, Amon-Ra's massive numbers were obviously, like, I'm in between. I think to do what he did down the stretch, regardless of who's around you, you're a pretty damn good football player, but also you can't deny the fact that it clearly helped him. Like 11 targets per game. He might have 11 targets in a game once this year, if that. Like it's going to be tough. But like, I know Dan Campbell's a huge fan of his. I still think the way he wins intermediate wise and everything like that, and with Jameson Williams, how long he's going to be out, we'll see. I would be shocked if he didn't. I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't lead the team in targets because they have Swift and Hockenson, but I'd be shocked if he finished outside the top three. But yeah, I have him closer to like wide receiver 35. Like even as high as I am on him, he's not a top 30 receiver for me. Like I'd much rather have players around him like Darnell Mooney, obviously Brandon Cooks, who shout out to the ADP. He's finally rising and he's still seven spots too low. So yeah, like Amon-Ra is going to be, I think he's going to be a weekly, you know, PPR wide receiver three, but like the offense is going to be a little bit better, but it's still like Dan Campbell took over the rest of the season that since he was there, seventh in neutral script run rate. This is going to be a run for his team. And I just think Amon-Ra is really good, but he's also not getting 8 targets a game might be the ceiling for him, let alone not getting 11. So I'm all in on Amon-Ra as a player, but yeah, if he's going into the top 27, 28, 30 receivers, like I'm closer to wide receiver 35, so I can't lie.
So, and I think what it is, you know, like I said, I was really high on Amon-Ra St. Brown coming into the league. And it was actually Mike Taglier was the one that would push back on me all last offseason when I was pumping him up, you know, talking about the history of fourth round wide receivers, you know, saying that his best case scenario was Cecil Shorts. And I think that, you know, he smashed my expectations as a rookie. And I think that he still is going to be a very good real life football player. But just looking at the talent that they have added to Detroit, I think that, you know, he's going to do great operating underneath and help open up some opportunities for some other players. I just don't know if we're going to see, like I said, a meaningful enough workload for him to live up to his ADP.
Let's go to some other players falling in our rankings. I have Pat Freiermuth on here. Like it was very impressive what he did. You know, once he got acclimated to the offense and was a full-time player, Eric Ebron missed some time, and then Freiermuth became a full-time player and didn't really look back. A lot of it was touchdowns. Like he was like top five in red zone targets among tight ends. Like my concern with Freiermuth is, for me, like the tight ends I want to draft, if I'm not drafting Kelsey, Waller, not even Waller to that extent. I'm fine with Waller and Kittle if they fall to like the fourth or fifth round, but like Waller or Andrews, Kelsey, Kyle Pitts, and then if I'm waiting, like I'm looking for a tight end that can legitimately finish second on their team in targets, and I don't know if Freiermuth has that in his range of outcomes. You have Chase Claypool and Deontay Johnson there. Johnson obviously has been an elite target producer through his NFL career. You have Claypool, who I actually think is going to take a step forward this year because he's going to play in the slot more, according to Matt Canada. And then you add, obviously, in the draft, you had George Pickens, you had a ton of talent, plus you still have Najee Harris, who is he going to see as many receptions as he saw last season? Probably not, but I would still pencil him in to finish top 5 to 7 among running backs and receptions and targets. So for me, like, I just don't know if there's a massive ceiling unless he's scoring the touchdowns again, and I don't view this offense as one that's going to be able to have him score the touchdowns like he did last season. So for me, like, where Freiermuth goes, like, I'd rather take Zach Ertz, I'd rather take Irv Smith, I'd rather take Cole Kmet. Smith and Kmet go a little bit later. And then there's tight ends that I kind of struggle with in that range, like Mike Gesicki. Like that range of tight ends where like Freiermuth and Gesicki go, like I'm just probably not drafting a tight end there. And if I am, it's somebody other than Pat Freiermuth. So what are your thoughts on Freiermuth in the Steelers offense in year two?
Yeah, you know, as fun as it is to push back and say I disagree, you know, it makes for some fun and engaging content. I'm in lockstep with you 100%, man. Freiermuth is just not a guy that I've really been interested in at all. It, you know, we see this all the time where these guys have not a lot of targets, put up some huge touchdowns. People chase that the next year and it blows up in their face. I mean, Robert Tonyan last year was still getting off to 3.5 targets per game before his ACL tear. And I think that a lot of people that got, were on the Tonyan train were bailed out by that injury. But Dawson Knox is another guy that, you know, I like Dawson Knox slightly more than Pat Freiermuth, but same type of thing, you know, with the limited volume and that really high touchdown rate, it just screams regression to me. So I am in lockstep with you 100%. When I'm looking at, that tier of tight ends, I'm targeting the same exact guys that you mentioned. I'm way higher on Zach Ertz, Irv Smith, Cole Kmet. I would prefer all of those guys straight up over Freiermuth.
Yeah, and like Dawson Knox is interesting too because I will not lie. I'm a biased Bills fan. I always will be. But like, even I haven't been drafting a lot of Dawson Knox because like it's the same. Like, I think he's a better player and in a better offense, obviously. But like the touchdown regression, because we're not going to get into it, but obviously I'm a huge Gabe Davis fan. If I expect him to, I expect him to score like 9 to 10 touchdowns. If he's scoring those touchdowns, Dawson Knoxes are coming down. Like, it's just happening. So like, yeah, he's another tight end that goes in that range where it's like, yeah, I understand their ceilings, if they hit, are much higher than a player like Zach Ertz. But I when I draft a tight end, I'm looking for somebody that runs routes and has a legitimate chance at finishing second on their team in targets. Is Ertz going to finish second on the team in targets? No, but he's probably going to be second until DeAndre Hopkins is back. And, you know, Cole Kmet was second last year. He's probably going to be second again this year. So, like, for me, Freiermuth, yes, he'll be on the field a lot. But, like, there's going to be a lot of those three catch for 36-yard games. And if he doesn't score, like, it's not going to get it done for me. So, who's another player that's been falling for you either recently, the last couple months? I mean, anybody.
This feels like such a layup, and I almost feel guilty taking this one because it's so easy to talk about. But Michael Thomas, I mean, we haven't seen this guy play since 2020. That ankle injury that was supposed to sideline him for 4 months, that was almost 2 years ago. And then we just saw this video come out where he was running some routes. And, you know, I feel,
quote unquote,
feel kind of guilty saying that somebody looked bad as an athlete because, you know, I'm a 32-year-old with a beer belly, but he did not look good. I mean, his straight line speed looked slow. He had this little kind of hitch or limp, whatever you want to call it, in his step. When he was trying to turn, he had no lateral quickness at all. And I think the writing is just on the wall for a huge fallout where we're just not going to see him anymore. This offseason, the Saints signed Jarvis Landry. They drafted Chris Olave, and it seems like they're just prepping for life after Michael Thomas. And for some reason, he's still getting drafted as a wide receiver 3, and I get it. I mean, the guy's ceiling is just so high. We saw what he did a few years ago. But the other thing is, people are still focused on what he did, you know, a few years ago. Now he's 29 years old. He is two full seasons removed from any sort of fantasy relevance. And the biggest thing that nobody seems to be concerned about is that he doesn't have Drew Brees anymore. I mean, I feel like he benefited so much from having a late-career Drew Brees who would just hyper-target him on those short slant routes. Jameis Winston spreads the ball out a little bit more, so even if Michael Thomas were to come back 100% healthy, he wouldn't have the same ceiling with Jameis Winston that he had with Drew Brees. So where he's getting drafted right now as a wide receiver 3, he is completely off my draft board. And like I said, I feel like this one's kind of a layup, but there are some people out there that just need that moment where they need to step back and realize that if you're still holding on to hope for Michael Thomas, it probably isn't going to happen.
And the other thing is, like, we've seen Michael Thomas for the majority of his career. Like, yes, he's an amazing player when he's healthy, but also, like, this is the most loaded the Saints receiving room has been in his entire career. Like, Chris Olave's there, Jarvis Landry's there, like, Marcus Callaway is still a solid player. Like, they have talent. And, like, Thomas, for me, is he going to see a 30% target share like he has been seeing? Probably not. And the other thing is, we've seen the Saints team the last couple seasons, since Dennis Allen has transformed this defense to being... I mean, I remember when the Saints were like you just targeted every Saints game in fantasy because their defense was atrocious. And then the last 6-7 years or so, they've been among the best defense in the NFL, and they've relied on the running game and playing defense. And I don't see that changing this season. Jameis Winston averaged like just over 20 pass attempts per game last season, which is like the complete opposite of Jameis from Tampa Bay. Like 20 per game, that's insanely low. And a lot of that came, there was a blowout against Green Bay in week one where he only threw like 17, 18 times. But like, is he going to throw 25 times a game? If that's the case, like, there's not a ceiling for Michael Thomas if Olave is there and Landry's there and Kamara's getting, you know, receptions out of the backfield too.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And I just want to note real quickly too, talking about Jameis, he had the best touchdown rate and lowest interception rates of his career last year. I mean, we got to give it props. So this guy, you know,
Jameis played so really well last year. Like his numbers are like not sustainable in terms of touchdown rate and fantasy points per dropback. He led all quarterbacks in fantasy points per dropback, obviously, because of that Green Bay game. And I believe the play he tore his ACL, he threw a long touchdown pass. But he really bought in last season with the Saints. He played fantastic. And like the roster they have, like, they lost some pieces, sure, but they also added some pieces. Like, they lost Marcus Williams at safety, but they added Honey Badger. They added Marcus May. Like, they still have, especially in the NFC, like, they're going to be right there. Not necessarily with the Rams and with the Bucks, but in terms of that wild card, like, you know, a top six seed, like, they'll be right there. So, like, I don't see a situation where they're just saying, okay, like, Michael Thomas, we're going to feature you in our offense because we still, all of a sudden, we have Jarvis Landry, we have Chris Olave. So, I was drafting Michael Thomas a lot like early in the offseason before they added Landry and before when it kind of sounded like Thomas was definitely going to play week one. But I have completely fallen off since. So I think it's a good call.
It's kind of weird how people maybe see what they want to see, but you know, some people saw the video of him running routes, and I know this is an audio show only, but I'm doing air quotes right now. And some people saw that and they were like, oh my goodness, Michael Thomas is back. And I saw that and I said, well, I am done drafting Michael Thomas. It's kind of weird how you see what you want in those videos.
Yeah. And especially if like if you're like, I'll use this as an example. Like if I saw, so I don't know how long you've been following me on Twitter, but Marvin Jones, like it's my favorite.
Yep.
So if I see Marvin Jones catch a fade route, to me, that's the best play in the history of the NFL. But to anybody else, it's like, oh, it's whatever. It's a nice catch. I'm guilty of it, man. It happens to everybody.
I got to say, I love that you just lean into your biases. So many people pretend like they're 100% objective, and you just own it. I love that about you, Adam.
I'm on with Bob Harris on, he was on Tuesday's episode, and I'm kind of like leaning into a Bills take about the Giants. We're talking about the Giants, and I was talking about, I love this Giants offense because, and I was getting to it, and Bob's like, oh, Brian Daboll. I was like, yep, pretty much. Like, you already know it. For me, though, my last faller, to an extent, is James Conner. It's not like he's out of my top 15 or anything, but earlier in the offseason, he was like a top 10 running back for me. And it kind of coincides with me moving Barkley way up and other running backs way up, Aaron Jones, DeAndre Swift. And the fact that I'm starting to realize that James Conner, he's not going to score touchdowns at the rate he did last season, right? Only Jonathan Taylor had more carries from inside the five last year than Conner, who had 16. But on those 16 attempts inside the five, he scored 10 touchdowns. Like, it was insanely efficient. We know the splits with and without Chase Edmonds. So for me, if I could be completely off on this, if he's getting the same passing game role he had in the games Edmonds was out last season, obviously they brought in Darrell Williams, they have Keontae Ingram, who they drafted, and you know, Benjamin's still there. If he's getting the passing game work and the third down work, then, you know, outside the top 12 or even 12 overall at running back, it's probably going to be too low. But for me, like, it was a huge reason why Kyler was disappointing a lot of the weeks, because he only had like one touchdown in a lot of games because James Conner kept converting touchdowns from inside the five and even inside the 10. He had 28 carries from inside the 10 last season, but 12 of them went for touchdowns. Like, it's an insanely efficient rate that I don't expect to continue. So for me, like, where he's going, give me Fournette, give me Barkley, who I moved ahead of him, give me Swift, Aaron Jones, pretty easily over Connor. But like, it's not that I don't like him, it's just I moved him down a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Again, man, I'm in lockstep with you. I think I tweeted it out back in March or April, whenever it was that Chase Edmonds signed with Miami. And I said, well, James Conner is a lock as a top 15 running back. And then, yeah, you just start moving some other players up. And for me, it was the Darrell Williams signing. You know, it really kind of flew under the radar. But Darrell Williams is just fantastic at what he does in the receiving game. You know, you look at his numbers last year. He was fourth in yards per reception. He was 12th in yards per route run. He was eighth in routes run overall. Number six in catch rate. And this guy doesn't catch passes like a running back. He catches passes like a receiver. I mean, he can make contested catches on a cornerback or a linebacker. He's really an underrated pass catching running back. And I think that last year was the absolute ceiling that you're going to see for James Conner. I mean, it was just such a weird season where he started off the season getting hardly no touches and just converting an obscene amount of touchdowns. And then as everybody's screaming regression is coming, then Chase Edmonds gets injured and all of a sudden he turns into a three down back. And then also on top of that, he stayed healthy last year, which is very unprecedented for James Conner. So I feel like last year was as close to a ceiling as you're going to get for James Conner. And yeah, I've slid him down into the 20s since.
The only thing I'm worried about is the first 6 weeks of the season. Because remember, last year, DeAndre Hopkins was kind of touchdown dependent for the first time in his career. Like, it was a bunch of end zone targets. And with him not there, it's like, I feel like we're going to see, like, the first 6 weeks, James Conner's got seven touchdowns or something. And it's going to be like, oh, here we go again. The other thing is that people forget, when Edmonds was healthy to start the season, he was the 1A. James Conner was the 1B, and a lot of his work came in late in games. The Cardinals, the first couple weeks, they were blowing teams out. They blew out, I think, Jacksonville. They had another pretty large win, and that's where Conner, the reason he got up to like 16, 17 touches in some of those games. So not, it's a different situation now, obviously, but if whoever they brought in, Williams or Keontae Ingram, if they are in even somewhat of a Chase Edmonds role, plus the touchdown efficiency dropping, we talk about players who, you know, Dalvin Cook didn't score touchdowns last year. He's going to go up, but same time, if you're scoring touchdowns at an alarming rate that's not sustainable, that's going to go the opposite way too. And that's how I feel about James Conner. So I'm still fine with him as my running back, but I prefer him as my running back too, whereas a lot of people still probably prefer him. They'd be fine with him as an RB1. I don't think that's egregious, but I probably feel better if he's my RB2. Who's your final player that's been falling for you?
Now, this one, it's a lot like Amon-Ra St. Brown, where this guy had a very good rookie season, and then there were just some big changes in the offseason, and he should have slid down, and I don't think that he slid far enough. So Michael Carter, you know, very solid rookie season, but fantasy managers have just kind of ignored this offseason's moves. The Jets drafted Breece Hall, and he profiles to be the next big-name NFL running back. His athletic measurables are up there with Saquon Barkley and Jonathan Taylor, and Michael Carter, you know, for what he did as a rookie was impressive, but he was a fourth round pick. And I think that he is just going to struggle to get on the field at all. And when you look at how ADP is shaken out right now, he's getting drafted. Michael Carter is getting drafted in the same tier as guys like Alexander Mattison, Rashad White, and Isaiah Spiller. Those are high end handcuffs on explosive offenses. Carter does not belong in that mix. He's on the Jets. I mean, if he was pushed down draft boards a little bit and I could get him, you know, with Khalil Herbert and Jamal Williams and some of these handcuffs on less explosive offenses, sure, I'd be in. But his price tag right now is reflective of being either an elite handcuff or somebody who's going to have some weekly flex appeal. You know, you're looking at Nyheim Hines, Darrell Williams, who we just talked about, Gus Edwards, guys that are still going to get on the field regardless of what happens to the guy ahead of them. Carter is neither of those. He's not an elite handcuff. And he's not somebody who's going to get on the field when Breece Hall is healthy. And he just should have slid down draft boards after the Breece Hall selection. And he didn't as much as he should have. So he's a guy at cost that I'm just completely out on this year, despite having a very impressive rookie season. And we see this a lot of times where teams are rebuilding and they'll give, you know, pretty sizable workloads to guys that don't have a lot of draft capital. And then those guys are very quickly replaced. You know, I'm a Bears fan, so I remember it very clearly. Jordan Howard had two great teams on a rebuilding Bears team. And then once they finally kind of made that push forward where they said, all right, we're done rebuilding and we want to start winning now, they went out and they drafted David Montgomery, and Jordan Howard was a complete afterthought. I just can't help but feel like that is the exact path that Michael Carter is heading down.
Yeah, it's tough for me with Michael Carter, too, because just like you said, he was really impressive as a rookie last season. He was top 12 in missed tackles forced. Like, I talked about this with Bob Harris on Tuesday as well. We were talking about just the player, Michael Carter. Like, contact balance-wise reminds me a little bit of Alvin Kamara. Like, he was really impressive, but they had the opportunity to just, they're just loading up off on offense, right? And I tweeted this while I was doing my Jets write-up, but we know this offense with Mike LaFleur coming from San Francisco 2 years ago, it's going to be a wide zone blocking scheme. And last season at Iowa State, like 69.1 or 2% of Breece Hall's carries came out of zone blocking schemes. Like it's a really good fit for Breece Hall. So yeah, like I'm not really dropping Michael Carter. I just also at the same time haven't really been drafting him much because, like you said, Darrell Henderson goes in that range. Madison goes in that range. Rashad White goes in that range. Nyheim Hines probably has a little bit more standalone value, especially if he gets more work with Matt Ryan, who throws to the running backs way more than Carson Wentz. Like, he even goes in that range. So I don't hate the call. I like the player a lot, but I feel like his role is going to be maxed out at, like, whatever games Giovanni Bernard would play for Cincinnati when Joe Mixon was healthy. I think that's going to be the ceiling of volume for Michael Carter as long as Breece Hall is healthy. And it's kind of funny because he got a lot of Giovanni Bernard comps coming out of North Carolina because, you know, played in a split backfield. And of course, they both went to North Carolina. So,
I just want to kind of qualify what I'm saying here is that I love Michael Carter, the player. And I'll say the same thing about Amon-Ra St. Brown and even Gabe Davis, who we briefly mentioned. I think these guys are very, very good players. My issue with them has nothing to do with them as talents, just where they're being drafted. And I say this often, you know, my takes are 100% contingent on ADP. And, you know, if Gabe Davis was getting drafted two rounds later, if Amon-Ra St. Brown was getting
I can't wait. I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I'm going to do it anyway. Gabe Davis is so interesting because you and I talk about it all the time. His underdog ADP is like laughable almost. It's like wide receiver 21. But if when you go to do a 12 team redraft league with your buddies from home, he's going to go in the seventh round. And it's going to be insane.
100% yeah. At that cost, give me all the Gabe Davis. I'm not paying a fourth round price tag for him, but if I can get him in the seventh, absolutely.
It's so crazy too because
if he's slipping into the eighth, ninth round, I'm in.
Yeah, and underdog is tough because stacking is such a high priority. So, like, he's getting pushed up because Josh Allen's obviously going the first couple rounds. But, yeah, imagine being in, like, after doing all the drafts we've done this offseason, seeing him go from, like, sixth round to fifth round, fourth round, and then you go, you know, in a month or so and do a home league draft, and you see, oh, man, I need a receiver, and you see Gabe Davis in the middle of the seventh round. You're like, this is new. Like, I'm not hesitating, though. Like, this is new.
I don't know if you've started doing many drafts on Sleeper yet, but, I mean, that's me. I've been doing underdog drafts every single day. I'm so
yeah, you have to adjust how you view the rankings on different sites because you scroll down and you see Gabe Davis, and it's like, oh, I assumed he was already drafted.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's kind of weird knowing that, like, you know, this is a guy that I'm actively targeting in my underdog drafts in the fourth or fifth round. And I know that on sleeper, I can wait a little bit later. You know, Alan Lazard is a guy that, you know, he's creeping up there in ADP if you're on underdog. But right now in sleeper, he's still getting drafted in the 12th, 13th round where he's a fantastic value. So it's all about knowing ADP on the site that you're drafting on and using that to your advantage.
You kind of led with it. Let's get right into the risers. Let's start with Alan Lazard, who I don't know how he's rising, because I feel like you've already been pretty damn high on this offseason. But I like Lazard too, not as much as you, but I'm definitely in on Alan Lazard. So
yeah, so I mean, I've been beating the drum for this guy for years. Even before Davante Adams was traded away, he was my most rostered guy in Dynasty. So maybe there's a little bit of personal bias here, because he's a guy that I've, you know, watched up close and personal as a Bears fan. And I just love what Alan Lazard does on the field. And he's never been a huge producer, but he just does a lot of the dirty stuff that receivers don't like to do. And a lot of times when you're able to do, you know, the run blocking and things like that, you just earn extra snaps that keep you on the field. I mean, Cooper Kupp just came off the best season that we've ever seen in NFL history, and it took him years to get there, but he kind of carved out his role in the offense by doing a lot of that dirty work and getting out there and blocking and helping out other players, earned his snaps, and then became a, you know, prolific wide receiver. So I've been beating the drum for this guy for years, but after Davante Adams was traded away, then I really kicked it up a gear. The biggest thing that Alan Lazard has going for him is the trust and chemistry with Aaron Rodgers. And you've probably heard this ad nauseum at this point. People talk about it all the time. But, you know, the trust of Aaron Rodgers is not a thing that a lot of people get. And I know the negatives with Alan Lazard, so I'll just, you know, address those right off the bat. He was undrafted. He's never had more than a 16% target share in a season. Now in year five, he's just coming off his first season ever with 500 yards. And I get it. You know, there's a lot of reasons that you can find to fade Alan Lazard, but I got to look past the numbers and just go right down narrative street when looking at his situation. First of all, that's kind of been the standard for all rookie wide receivers, or young wide receivers, I should say, in the Aaron Rodgers era. Davante Adams, if you look at his early season, I mean, he was a face planter, 446 yards as a rookie. It took him until year five.
Couldn't catch the ball.
What was that?
He couldn't catch the ball.
Yeah, he struggled, and he was a beast after the catch. I mean, he had, you know, you can look at some of his rookie year highlights, and he had some nice plays, but he struggled with a lot of the, you know, just the... Christian Watson is very comparable to Davante Adams. I think he's going to struggle with some of those things as well. But it took Davante Adams 5 years to log his first 1,000-yard season. Jordy Nelson, through his first 3 years in the league, put up worse numbers than Alan Lazard did in his first 3 years in the league. Randall Cobb saw 31 targets as a rookie. All of these guys plummeted in value before they had their respective breakouts. Now, looking at the season, Lazard is the most tenured player on the team. And just kind of thinking schematically how this Green Bay offense is going to work, you got the slot that's going to be occupied by either Randall Cobb or Aaron Jones. Christian Watson, the second-round rookie that they drafted, he's a great athlete, but he is, you know, a carbon copy of MVS, and he's going to take on that role. He's got great straight-line speed, struggles with adjusting the ball in the air, not the best at catching the ball either, so he profiles to be the team's flanker. And then looking at who's going to occupy that X role that was vacated by Davante Adams, it just makes sense that it's going to be Alan Lazard. He's got the trust and the chemistry with Aaron Rodgers. And if Alan Lazard is the first read on a lot of these plays, he's going to get peppered with targets. And it doesn't take a lot to put up an elite fantasy season when you're playing with Aaron Rodgers. I looked this up a few days ago, but there have been 18 instances of Aaron Rodgers throwing 100 or more targets to a wide receiver. The worst fantasy production that anybody generated with 100-plus targets from Aaron Rodgers was by a 33-year-old Donald Driver, and his numbers that season still would have been good enough for wide receiver 24 last year. So if you're projecting 100-plus targets for Aaron Rodgers next year, you should be looking at his floor as being a top 24 wide receiver with a very good likelihood that he can crack into the top 12 and put up a wide receiver one season.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the end of last season, and you talk about trust with Aaron Rodgers, and it gets thrown around a lot, but I think in certain situations we have to account for, and it's definitely with Rodgers, right? And they've been looking for that number two opposite Davante Adams that could really be trusted, and down the stretch last year, that's when it really started to be Alan Lazard, even with Davante Adams on the field. Not that he was out-targeting Davante Adams, obviously, but there were more connections and more plays for Alan Lazard the last handful of weeks of the season. You look at the last 5 weeks of last year, Alan Lazard was the wide receiver 8 in PPR leagues. He averaged a touchdown per game during that span. He had six end zone targets over the final 5 weeks, which was tied with Davante Adams for the 5th most in the NFL. He actually finished with one more end zone target on the season than Davante Adams did. Now, I think he played one more game because Adams didn't play in that week 18 game, but is Alan Lazard going to be a top eight receiver like he was those weeks? Of course not. But like where he's being drafted, I think it's like wide receiver 40 right now. Like he could easily be a top 30 receiver based off touchdowns. Like I don't know if he's going to be, you know, a great yardage receiver. We did the Green Bay Packers preview of the podcast earlier this week. And Jeff Ratcliffe, who does our projections here at FTN Fantasy, he has Lazard projected for like 550, 540 yards. I'm not saying he's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver, but I was telling Tyler, I'm going to take the over on the yardage, and I think he has a path to 8 to 10 touchdowns, realistically. The only way he doesn't is if, like, Aaron Jones just gets an A.J. Dillon. They just say, you know what, we're playing to our strengths. We're going to give these guys all the goal line touches, which is entirely possible. But, like, if we think Aaron Rodgers, even with Adams out, is going to just walk into another 30-touchdown season, like, somebody's got to catch them. Are we worried about John Brown? If they bring John Brown in, I love John Brown, but like the only thing that could really go wrong for Lazard, other than the fact that he just could be really terrible and there's a reason he wasn't getting all this work the first 5 years, the other only thing other than that is Green Bay trades for somebody at you know in the middle of the season, because they're still a team that has a Super Bowl window. Their roster's loaded outside of receiver. They could just say, you know what, we need a little bit more outside. Christian Watson's not really developing as fast as we'd hoped. Sammy Watkins has only played X amount of games. Lazard's been fine, but we need somebody that can really, you know, break a game open. And that's when they trade for somebody. That's really the only thing I'm worried about Lazard, but we can't worry about that, you know, in July and August. And, you know, Lazard for me, he's, I think, ADP of a wide receiver 40. I'm not massively ahead of that, but definitely comfortably ahead.
Yeah, and I've got him right now. I mean, same. I'm not, you know, saying that you should draft this guy, you know, as a top 12 receiver or anything like that. I'm just kind of painting a picture for his upside. I've got him as wide receiver 28, so still, whew, you know, a little bit above where he's getting drafted right now. But, I mean, this is a guy who I started beating the drum for when you could get him literally in the last round of your underdog draft. He was going in the 18th round. And, you know, until he creeps into the sixth round or so, I'm still going to be actively targeting him.
I like it. So who are some receivers you have him ahead of that are usually not ahead of him?
I mean, one of the guys that I just talked about, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and I know That one's a little bit spicy. Gabe Davis is another guy that I've got ahead of him. I think one of the spicier ones, though, that I have is Darnell Mooney, who is getting drafted pretty far
that is pretty spicy.
Of Alan Lazard.
Especially as a Bears fan.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And we, you know, I talk about that often. I try my best not to let my bias get in the way of my analysis. I'm also a Bears fan. But I am a jaded and cynical and pessimistic Bears fan. I mean, I love the team. I root for them every single Sunday, but I have no expectations for them whatsoever.
So I'm going to talk about a running back that's been rising for me. When the offseason started, I was like, you know what? I'm not even going to touch the Miami backfield. Too many players there. It's coming from an offense, a new offense that has been using multiple running backs. But the more I dove into it, the more I think Chase Edmonds could be really good in this offense. Look at what the Miami Dolphins did. Chase Edmonds was like legitimately the first player signed in free agency this offseason. Like Miami clearly made it a priority to bring him in. And yes, they brought in Raheem Mostert with familiarity to the system. He has not stayed healthy. I think one of Sony Michel or Miles Gaskin or Savon Ahmed, one of them is not making the team. They're not going to have five running backs on the roster. And Edmonds, I think, is going to be at least the 1A to start the season. The offensive line's improved with Trent Williams being brought in. This is another team that's, you know, a lot of outside runs, a lot outside zone. Elijah Mitchell last season finished third in the league in outside runs with 64, despite only playing 11 games. And Chase Edmonds has been really efficient on outside runs in his career. I think with the ability he has, like, he's always been an efficient player. And I'm not saying Chase Edmonds is going to come in and get 20 carries a game. But 13 to 16 touches a game from Chase Edmonds in an improving offense, behind an improving offensive line, a good fit in the system. I've been definitely moving him up. I started with him again, like I said, like earlier in the offseason, I was literally saying, you know what? Why is everybody arguing about the Miami backfield? You don't have to draft anybody from this backfield. And because I'm doing a lot of these underdog drafts, I'm doing a lot of zero RB builds and a lot of receiver heavy builds. I've been really, really kind of surprised at how much I like some of the running backs you can get in that range. Chase Edmonds being one of them, Ramondre Stevenson, Melvin Gordon. So I don't want to say I'm all in on Chase Edmonds. But looking at Sports Info Solutions, he ranked inside the top 10 in EPA per rush on zone designs last year. So, like, I think he's a good fit for the offense. I think I know he's a talented player. He's always been good when he's gotten opportunity. And the more I think about it, I think, is it going to be a, you know, every down, you know, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Dalvin Cook type, you know, workload at running back? No, but I think he'll be efficient on the 15 touches or so he gets in an improving offense. So I've definitely moved him up.
Yeah, I mean, Chase Edmonds is a guy that I've definitely been warming up to a little bit. I was so off Chase Edmonds early in the offseason. And I
was off the entire backfield.
Yeah, and the thing, you know, I think, first of all, I want to point out, you know, everybody talks about how a Shanahan offense is a goldmine for running backs. You know the last running back that produced a top 24 season in a Kyle Shanahan offense? Take a guess, Adam. It wasn't anytime recently. You got to go all the
Carlos
way back
Hyde.
To Carlos Hyde, exactly. And what was that, 2018, 2019?
I think the only reason he did that, too, is he had an outlier receiving year that season, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong.
Yep. And there's a lot of reasons for it, because typically they don't hyper-target receivers in this offense, so there aren't going to be a lot of passes thrown to them. But also, it's just that outside zone scheme, it leads to a lot of injuries, because you're putting these running backs in space where they have to plant a foot and cut up field, and then they're taking big hits because they aren't behind an offensive line. So you get a lot of injuries in this type of offense. So a lot of it is just due to the fact that we very rarely see any running back stay healthy for 17 games in a Shanahan offense. But, you know, I think the big knock that I have against Chase Edmonds is just how similar his profile is to Myles Gaskin. Same age, same height, same weight. They were both day three picks. And when you look at their, you know, yards after contact, their efficiency is really similar there. The huge edge that Chase Edmonds had was yards before contact, playing behind a much better offensive line. So when you look at the overall numbers, you know, it looks like Chase Edmonds is a lot better than Myles Gaskin, but a lot of that just had to do with the line that he was playing behind in Arizona.
Well, so, Kyler helps too with that, with yards before mm-hmm. contact. Like a lot of quarterbacks that can run as well, they're so massive for that. Like you look at the Ravens running backs, they've been elite in yards before contact. LeSean McCoy back with Buffalo, he was really good in yards before contact, so that definitely helps too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's not that I am strongly opposed to Chase Edmonds. Really what I'm doing is just drafting pretty much everybody in the, like, whoever slides in this backfield, I'll draft, whether it's Chase Edmonds, Raheem Mostert, Sony Michel in the 18th round even. I don't think that anybody is going to play a full 17 games and put up an elite season, but we know all of these guys are going to have some boom weeks in there. So I'm just kind of picking and choosing random guys in all of my drafts. I don't really have a clear, strong take on the Miami backfield, though.
Yeah, and like with Raheem Mostert, like, still arguably the fastest running back in the NFL. Like if he can somehow stay healthy, we already know he's going to fit this offensive scheme to a T. So I don't even mind, you know, drafting him late. It's just like, I just don't know how many games he's going to play. All right. So I obviously love Gabriel Davis. You've been talking up another Bills receiver for a lot of the offseason. I can't say I'm against it either because A, it's the Bills offense, and B, like this receiver's been talented. He's talented. He's been productive in the past. Why are you very interested in Jameson Crowder?
Man, I mean, first of all, I'll preface this by saying I've been a huge Jameson Crowder fan since his Washington days. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. Something about like undersized, scrappy receivers that like aren't afraid to take big hits, don't shy away from contact, like yards after the catch. I just love those guys. You know, got that dog in them. It's kind of become a joke at this point, but that's how I feel about Jameson Crowder. I mean, I just love him. And now looking at the role that he steps into, I mean, this is a guy who has never played with a good quarterback. He has always been on well below average offenses. And now he goes to arguably the most explosive offense in the NFL with a quarterback that many people would say is the best quarterback in the NFL, and goes into a slot that was vacated by Cole Beasley. Literally,
nice pun.
The slot role. Exactly.
I was literally going to say nice pun.
And, you know, Cole Beasley, he saw 100 or more targets in three consecutive seasons playing out of the slot role in Buffalo. In those seasons, he was the wide receiver 33, wide receiver 27, wide receiver 37. And now Crowder steps right into that role. Crowder is bigger, stronger, faster, younger. And in my opinion, he's just an all-around better football player. I mean, Cole Beasley, people kind of forget because of the last few productive seasons that he's had, but Cole Beasley was nothing. Like, look at what he did in Dallas. He was not putting up any numbers at all. It was when he showed up and started playing with Josh Allen that everybody was like, oh, this Cole Beasley guy is pretty good. So I think Jameson Crowder steps in there, commands that 100-plus targets that you see from Cole Beasley, and then with his ability after the catch, I just think that he puts up much better fantasy production. So if we're looking at the last three seasons as a floor out of the slot, you know, wide receiver 37 was the worst season that we have seen Cole Beasley put up. And right now, Jameson Crowder, you can get him after wide receiver 60. I mean, I don't think this guy has, you know, a wide receiver one ceiling. I'm not saying that he's going to finish top 10, top 5, or anything like that. But I think he's a guy that is going to finish somewhere between wide receiver 20 and wide receiver 30. And you could draft him as wide receiver 60. It just seems like such an easy smash in the 14th, 15th round of your draft.
Yeah, it almost doesn't even matter, like, how you feel about Jameson Crowder at wide receiver 60. Like, you're part of one of the best offenses in the NFL. Like, I don't see a, scenario where you draft him at wide receiver 60 and come away at the end of the season saying, damn it, I wish I didn't draft Jameson Crowder at wide receiver 60. The only thing I'm concerned about, it's not even a huge concern, is how, if the Bills continue to go three wide as much as any team in the NFL with Brian Daboll gone, they did add O.J. Howard, so maybe they'd go a little bit more like two tight end, or they go more just two receivers in general with Davis and Diggs. But I don't view them as a team. Like, they still promoted Ken Dorsey as offensive coordinator in-house, so it's not like they hired somebody from a different scheme, different offense. So I think most of this offense will look the same. There will be some different wrinkles, obviously, especially with some of the players they brought in. But yeah, I mean, wide receiver 60, like, there's literally zero downside, like none. So
yeah,
I like the call a lot. I want to talk about Jalen Tolbert, a rookie receiver. We're getting reports, obviously, that Michael Gallup doesn't look like he's going to be ready for week one. I mean, Jalen Tolbert is very similar to Michael Gallup, right? They're both, I think, 6'1". Gallup ran like a 4.5, 140. Tolbert was like 4.49, so a little bit faster. The only difference is Gallup has about 15, 20 pounds on him. But again, Jalen Tolbert hasn't even played an NFL down yet, so that'll easily change. But he's going to have an opportunity to step right in as the number two receiver, at least wide receiver, on the Dallas Cowboys, a team that's always been, at least under Kellen Moore, has been top five in pace every single season. They've been top five in pass rate lately. I don't see a scenario where, like, again, similar to, obviously he's not going to have the same ceiling or floor when Gallup's back, but Gallup can miss plenty of time. So I've definitely been moving Jalen Tolbert up. I think he's a talented player. He obviously commanded a ton of targets at South Alabama. I know it wasn't the greatest competition, but he showed that he can be, you know, the number one on offense and play at a high level, and he's not going to have to be the number one here. So definitely move Jalen Tolbert up as of late. What are your thoughts on Tolbert and this Dallas passing game with Gallup expected to miss the first handful of games of the season?
Yeah, I mean, this is such an ambiguous situation right now, and the reports on Gallup have not been good. I mean, we're hearing, the way I look at it, if we're 2 months out from the season and we're hearing that he might not be ready for week one, what I hear is this guy might not be ready until the midway point of the season. I mean, if we're getting bad reports this far out of camp, it's definitely cause for concern. And I mean, one of my reasons for liking Jalen Tolbert so much, and I'm not sure how you feel about this guy, I hope I'm not going to offend you, but I just am not a huge believer in Dalton Schultz. And so many people think that Dalton Schultz is going to be the number two option here in Dallas, and I don't see it. You know, he had a decent year last year, but I think he falls off a little bit. I'm just not a huge fan of the talent there. So I think Jalen Tolbert could easily be the number two guy on this team. He's got a ton of talent. So I'm with you. I've been drafting a ton of Jalen Tolbert lately.
It's kind of interesting because earlier I was like all in on Dalton Schultz, but now I'm just like, he's fine where he's going, but like he's got a better path or higher ceiling of for targets than like Goddard and Hockenson, but like they also do more, maybe not Hockenson, but Goddard, like they make more plays down the field. Like Schultz is catching the ball and just going down, and that's fine if he's getting 110 targets, but of the off chance he doesn't, like, yeah, I'm still fine with him, but like where he goes, like he goes like the sixth round. Like you're still passing up a lot of really good receivers and everything in that range. But yeah, I like Tolbert a lot as well. Again, he kind of reminds me of Michael Gallup, and I think he's going to fill that role as long as Gallup's out. Who's your final riser here? For me, he's not rising for me because it's already been pretty high for me. I'm really excited about Jalen Hurts at quarterback.
Yeah, and that's kind of, I mean, I'm using this one. This is just my kind of opportunity to plug, go out and draft Jalen Hurts as much as I can. I mean, his rise happened a couple months ago, but this guy should have been vaulted into realistically a top three or top four quarterback after the A.J. Brown trade. I mean, he was everyone's favorite sleeper last year, smashed his expectations. I mean, finished overall as a top five quarterback, but prior to his ankle injury that slowed him down a little bit, he was the overall QB1. I mean, this guy's ceiling is so high. And now with one of the best wide receivers in the league joining Philadelphia, his ADP should have skyrocketed, and it didn't. He's getting drafted after Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray. And I love it because I am drafting so much Jalen Hurts as he just falls to me as the last of what I consider to be the elite tier of quarterbacks. But personally, I've got him ahead of Patrick Mahomes. I've got him ahead of Justin Herbert, and I've got him ahead of Kyler Murray. I think that this guy should be getting drafted as a top three quarterback now that AJ Brown is there.
So you have it. I'm going to assume, and we're doing the podcast now, Dave has his video on. I see a Lamar Jackson jersey behind him. So I'm assuming it's Allen, Lamar, then Hurts is your top three.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And
I love Lamar this year.
Yeah. I mean, I love Lamar every single year, this year especially. But yeah, so it's Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, And then Jalen Hurts is the next guy I'd be taking off the board. The nice thing, though, is I don't have to because other people are still devaluing him for whatever reason that I can go snag a couple wide receivers.
And that's not going to change either.
Jalen Hurts three rounds later than I think he should be going.
That's not going to change either because he's already going after Kyler and Kyler just got his extension. Like, Kyler is going to be going ahead of him probably the rest of the offseason. And yeah, I have Hurts ahead of Kyler as well. So yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see the passing rate for this team. If they're going to be, they're not going to be as high as they were to start the season, but they're definitely not going to be as low as they were in the second half after you bring in AJ Brown. So
yeah, you don't trade away a first round pick and give a guy $100 million not to throw the ball to him a lot.
Yeah. Jalen Hurts, like, there's so many drafts that I'm going to be doing in the offseason and in August and like home leagues where it's like, oh, I filled out my quarterback, not filled out, but I've drafted a ton of receivers and running backs. I don't love the receivers on the board. And I see Jalen Hurts there in the sixth, seventh round. I'm like, yeah, I'm not even hesitating. Like you said, a legitimate, not just top three upside, but overall QB one upside. We saw it before the injury last season and the situation's even better. You add AJ Brown, not to mention quietly, you add Zach Pascal, who I like as a slot receiver. Mm-hmm. The offensive line is as elite as it comes in the NFL. And you have Kenneth Gainwell, who's one of my favorite pass catcher running backs in the league out of Memphis 2 years ago. So yeah, Jalen Hurts, I think like quarterback six, I think is just too low. 100%.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I mean, this guy put up great numbers last season, and no disrespect for Devonta Smith. I think Devonta Smith is a great football player. I was very bullish on him last offseason. I'm glad to see that he had the year that he did. But he doesn't profile to be a wide receiver one. He is so much better as a wide receiver two, and he was forced to play that wide receiver one last year. Well, Jalen Hurts was throwing to Quez Watkins and Jalen Reagor. I mean, it was terrible, like just an awful receiving core last year in Philadelphia, and Hurts still put up very good numbers. So now I think that you know, obviously AJ Brown is a huge addition, but I also think that Devonta Smith now getting to be the number two option in Philadelphia is going to be that much better for him, not drawing premium coverage from cornerbacks. So I think that AJ Brown, I mean, it just sends ripples through the entire offense. It's going to open up the passing game for him. It's going to make it easier for Jalen Hurts to rush. It just does so many things to that offense. I've been all in on Philadelphia. I'm not sure if you saw my SFB roster that I shared recently, but I drafted Jalen Hurts, AJ Brown, and Devonta Smith. I got all three of them, did the double stack on my SFB
nice.
Team.
I like that. My SFB team does not have any Eagles, unfortunately, mainly because I picked towards the end of the first round and Hurts is already gone. But I did get Brady and Russell Wilson, and I have Barkley, so I'm happy because I just want Saquon Barkley on all my teams. Another player that I think I want on a lot of my teams, and we'll close out the risers here, Travis Etienne. I've been moving him up, Dave, simply because I'm afraid to be too low on him. As dumb as that sounds, like, I think it's easy for everybody to forget how talented he is because we didn't see him his entire rookie season. And the offensive system, the environment's better with Doug Peterson there this season. We'll see when James Robinson's available to return. But, like, Etienne should be full go for week one. And I used to make this mistake so many times where I'd be like, yeah, but he's not going to get a lot of carries and he's not going to get 20 touches a game. And it's like, okay, some of the best running backs in fantasy are getting 16 carries a game and the majority of them are carries. Aaron Jones, Alvin Kamara, DeAndre Swift. Like, Etienne, if he's in that role, he's going to be great because he has the rapport with Trevor Lawrence, obviously. And, like, yes, the Jags added Christian Kirk and Evan Engram. But, like, overall, like, Etienne could still command a ton of targets in this offense. Could legitimately, you know, if he's playing all the games, could be one of the, you know, I don't know, handful of running backs to catch 60 plus passes this season. So I've been moving Etienne up, A, because I like the situation for him. B, I like the player. And two, I like the player in situation so much. And I'm afraid if I'm too low, I'm afraid to be too low on him.
Yeah, and I mean, we're degenerates, Adam. We've been drafting best ball teams since February and March here, but that's when I started, you know, really beating the drum for Travis Etienne was back in February and March, and I was coming out with videos and articles and tweeting about him, and I was saying, you know, go out and get this guy now because it's the cheapest he's ever going to be. And my exact words in a video that I said were, go out and draft him now because all it's going to take is one highlight from camp to come out, and his ADP is going to skyrocket. That's exactly what it was. And it wasn't even like anything, you know, impressive. It was just him running a routine route and catching a ball. But as soon as that happened, he jumped from the fifth to the third round in underdog drafts and is still creeping up. So everything that you said is spot on. You know, we've seen it with DeAndre Swift and Christian McCaffrey, pass catching backs on not so great offenses that are just gold mines for fantasy. And Etienne seems like he is going to be the next guy to take on that role.
Yeah, he could be legitimately top 12 this season. And it's not like he's
go
like
higher.
He's going to get 150 plus carries
overall.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's with James Robinson out at the beginning of the year too, might not even play at all this season. I mean, the ceiling for Etienne is so high. You should be looking at him the same way you're looking at guys like, you know, obviously he doesn't have the same floor, but he's got the same ceiling as guys like DeAndre Swift and Joe Mixon. Yeah, big, big fan of Etienne.
Yeah, there's always players like, I haven't been moving him up because there's a little bit more uncertainty in my opinion, but like a player like, there's so many players I just don't know what to expect from, but it's exciting. Like Cam Akers is in that range for me as well. Like, he could either be just really good and really recovered and back to being Cam Akers again, or he could be in a committee or something and just be completely underwhelming for fantasy. But like Etienne, I think he's fully healthy. I think he's going to be a huge part of this offense, obviously. So definitely been moving him up. Any other last players you want to mention before we get out of here, Dave? This has been a ton of fun.
No, I mean, if I start talking about a player, we're just going to keep going off it's on true. Tangents. We'll end up talking for 6 hours, Adam. You're a good guy to talk to. I can do this all day.
It's true. Appreciate you stopping by. It's a fun time doing the podcast for the first time with you, Dave. One more time before we get out of here, though, make sure you plug everything going on over at Football Guys and everything you're doing in terms of written and audio and video content.
Yeah, super simple nowadays. You know, this time last year, I was saying you got to find me here and here and here and here. And no, now it's all exclusively over at Football Guys. So you can find all my written and video content there. And drop me a follow on Twitter. That's at Dave Kluge, KLUGE. Not only will you see all of the content that I'm producing for Football Guys there, but I try to tweet out a bunch of stats and information as well. You can also find all of the things that I guest on there. And next week, Adam, you'll be coming on my show. That'll be out Friday afternoon. So be sure to check that out. That'll be coming out at 12 p.m. Eastern on Friday the 29th, the Launchpad, Adam. And we'll have another guest on that as well. But looking forward to linking up again next week.
Yeah, it'll be a ton of fun. Appreciate you stopping by. We'll have one more episode of the FTN DataCast this week on Friday, finishing up our team previews for the NFC North. And we're closing out the Chicago Bears, Dave. So might be a 20-minute pod, might be a 40-minute pod. It might be 40 minutes just because I love Justin Fields so much. So I could just talk about him for 40 minutes, but it also might be 20 minutes because other than Mooney, Fields, and Kmet, not a lot of excitement. I like Montgomery, but we'll break down that team like we do with every other team in the NFL. Thanks for listening as always. Dave, appreciate you stopping by. Excited to talk to you next week again. And make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on Apple, all that great stuff. And also, we just launched the FTN Dynasty podcast. That's going to be a really fun podcast to do once a week during the season, but it just got published on Apple as well, so you can go and rate and review that over there. Best of luck. We'll see you on Friday. Have a good one. Peace out.
Thanks for listening to the FTN DataCast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter at APfeiffer24 and at LochnerNFL.